Thank you. Y'all are too kind. Thanks for adjusting that for the short guy. I really appreciate it there, and thank you. Really grateful for that. Colonel, thanks for the introduction. It's painful to sit through your own bio, but I really appreciate all that you do for our country and your service and so many in this room. And we do reside now in Bossier Parish, but this is our second home. Webster, Kelly grew up on Gale Lane over here, and we in the Sibley. And we spend about half our time when I'm home from D.C. over here at the Larry's house. So glad to be with y'all. So many dear old friends in this room, and I'm really grateful for your encouragement and support, and that's been constant since the day we stepped into this arena, and we need it, and the prayers matter. I'm so grateful to be amongst a group that begins appropriately in the right way. Man, our nation needs it so badly right now. I sent a note yesterday to Mayor Terry when I heard his announcement, and life is short, you know, and prayer matters, and so we need to be engaged in that. I wanted to give you all an update from Washington and talk about whatever's on your hearts and minds. I want to reserve most of the time for Q&A so you can direct where it goes, and nothing's off limits today, so I'm happy to do that. But I want to address the elephant in the room first, and I know it's heavy on all of our hearts and minds with all the things we have to deal with right now, but this situation in Texas and another school shooting. Yes, sir. Is this too is that better? How about that? I'll kiss the mic. How about this? I'll take it off and walk with it. Can I do? Yeah. How's that? That better? Sorry. My voice is out, too, because I've been talking a lot the last couple of weeks, so this will be helpful. So what happened in Texas must be addressed. As you saw, the initial knee-jerk reaction on the part of many is to do this reflexive thing they always do. Let's take everybody's guns away. That's not the solution, all right? Thoreau said there are thousands hacking at the branches of evil to one who is striking at the root. And we need to look at the root cause of what this problem is. And I went on social media yesterday to address it, and what it boils down to is, everybody in this room knows, this is a spiritual problem, and it requires spiritual solutions. Now, most of my colleagues in Washington don't even understand that language, and they certainly don't want to acknowledge that. They'd rather try to attack it with new laws and restrictions and policies. There's a place for some of that, but really what we have to do as a nation is address the core problem that we're facing right now. The darkness is encroaching. We see it everywhere. We had a hearing last week. Some of you commented as I was coming in, our House Judiciary Committee hearing last week, where they brought in the leading advocates for the abortion industry in our House Judiciary Committee. We had an exchange. Some of y'all saw the clips of that. I asked one of the leading abortion providers in America under oath on the stand a very simple question. What is the principal distinction between taking the life of a 10-year-old child, which we all agree is wrong, and murder, or a 2-year-old child, or a 1-week-old child, or a 1-hour-old child, or a child that is 8 inches further up the birth canal? What is the principal distinction? Why is it not okay in the former cases and it's okay in the latter case? And she had sat in stunned silence for a few seconds, and she said, "I trust a woman to do whatever she wants to do with her body." And that clip went viral and went everywhere because it's a picture of what we're facing now. We're facing evil in our society. Now, what is the root cause of that and how do we address it? Listen, the founders of this country gave us very specific admonitions and advice, right? We're on July 4th is our nation's birthday. We're going to celebrate our 246th birthday. 246 years is not a long span of time on the history of all human history, right? Sounds like a lot to a high school kid, but we all know that's nothing. So how do you maintain this experiment in self-governance? Because that's what we have. We put together a constitutional republic unlike any nation in the world had ever done before. G.K. Chesterton was the famous British philosopher who summarized it. He said, "America is the only nation in the world that is founded upon a creed." What is the creed? He said it's listed with theological lucidity or clarity in the Declaration of Independence. Our nation's birth certificate is the declaration. It says there, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Created, not born equal. Created equal by God. And that God is the one that gives us our inalienable rights. Among those are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness. We set forth a country based upon the belief that there is no middleman. We said there should be no earthly king because our rights don't come from government, they come from God. And so we are one nation under him, and we are governing ourselves, self-governance. Nobody had ever done that before. So we, as Lincoln later said, we're a government of the people, by the people, for the people themselves. Now, here's the key. When the founders set this up, they didn't know. It was an experiment. They did not know how long it would last. There's no guarantee. But they said, listen, there's one key thing that you must ensure to keep this thing together. George Washington was our first president. In his famous farewell address, he listed all the things that we should be careful of and cautious of and the things that we should practice and keep. And he said, but of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are the indispensable supports. Then John Adams comes next, our second president. He said, our Constitution is made only for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the government of any other. Those are their words. Why did they say that? Because they said, there's no earthly boss. There's no earthly sovereign. There's God is the sovereign, and then it's the people. There's nobody who could step in and go, enough already. We don't have a king. We govern ourselves. And they said, in order to maintain a constitutional republic where people can have their freedom, there's a reason that we're the most free, most powerful, most successful, prosperous nation in the history of the world, because we're built on these principles. They're biblical, by the way. But they said, you must maintain morality. And morality finds its seedbed in religion. You have to have religion and morality. Otherwise, it will devolve into chaos. If the people who are governing themselves suddenly wake up one day and go, you know what, there is no God. We don't owe our allegiance to anybody, no higher power. Then chaos will begin to ensue. If they wake up and say, there's no absolute right or wrong, that life it has no inherent value, we could teach our kids to find their own truth. That's what they're teaching our kids and grandkids right now. Go find your own truth, right? That is a road to ruin. It's a road to serfdom. It's a road to tyranny. That's the road that we're on right now. And so all the effects that come of this should not really be all that surprising, because they're totally predictable. And they were 246 years ago when they gave us that advice. And we're walking away from that at our peril. Can we restore the soul, the foundation of America? We can. But it's not going to happen from Washington. It's going to happen in our local communities. It has to happen at the grassroots level, among the people. And so I'm so grateful for a community like Mendon, where people recognize the foundations of our country, where it's still respected. We still think it's worthy of defense to pass that along to our children. Ronald Reagan said, freedom is not inherited in the bloodstream. It has to be fought for and defended and taught to our children so they can preserve it. And right now our kids are being taught something else. And so it's incumbent upon us right now to do something about that. So, look, Monday is Memorial Day. We pay honor to those who made the ultimate sacrifice in service of our freedom. It's appropriate time. I was sitting down on my lunch over here, and I was looking at this old preamble of the Constitution of the American Legion. Look at line 3. I love this. To maintain law and order and to foster and perpetuate a 100% Americanism. You know, if I said that right now on the House floor, when I do this routinely, you can watch, I get jeered and booed. You know that? That's not a popular opinion in Congress right now. You know why? Because they want to surrender our sovereignty over to some new one world order, and they want us to be a European-style socialist nation. They don't appreciate this anymore. But this is what made us. This is what made us the great nation we are, and defending this is what's going to preserve it. So I do want to bring encouragement today. I want to be an ambassador of hope always. Scripture says in Romans 5, you know, suffering and trials produce perseverance. Perseverance produces character. Character produces hope. And we're a hopeful people by nature, because we know that God's still sovereign. No matter if they want to recognize it or not, they want to change all of his created order, it doesn't matter, because he's still sovereign. And we know who's in charge. And so I believe in his sovereignty and in his mercy and grace, he's going to give us another chance to save this republic. We have to. There's no better alternative. Reagan also said we're the last best hope of man on the earth, and we are. So we have to preserve it. So what's that going to take? Well, it's going to take people getting involved, and I think they're about to. I think there's a big election cycle coming up in November, and it's not just going to be a red wave. It's going to be a red tsunami, okay? And I don't want to give you a partisan speech. I don't think it's necessary. I just want to tell you that people are going to vote for common sense. They're going to vote for objective truth. They're going to vote for law and order and individual freedom and limited government, peace through strength, fiscal responsibility, free markets, human dignity. These are the things that we stand for, the things that made America great in the first place, and the things that we have to preserve to keep it. And I think people are waking up, because the pendulum can only swing so far, and people say enough already. The people say enough already. And that's what we're about to see. And so let me just tell you what all the pollsters now, right, left, and center, say. They believe that we're going to have a historic election this fall. And they're calling me right now to give me even better news because the data gets better by the hour. Any updates, let me know. We'll do it. That's all right. Listen, it's good. There is hope on the horizon, okay? I am very bullish on America. I am very bullish on the days ahead. We got to survive between now and November when that happens. But when the new Congress begins in January, they predict we may have the largest Republican majority in U.S. history. I had lunch with Newt Gingrich a couple weeks ago. He thinks we're going to have a 60-seat majority, Republican majority in the House. We believe we're going to be able to take control of the Senate again, at least by a couple of seats, and that'll be enough to get us going. Now, after that election cycle, President Biden will still have two more years in his office, but the big question is, that none of us can answer today, is will he pull a Bill Clinton? Remember when Newt Gingrich and the team took Republican control of Congress for the first time in 40 years in the mid-90s, Bill Clinton got the message. And he moderated, and he began to work with them. That's why they were able to implement a lot of the Contract with America and all that, because he saw what was good for the country, and he moderated his views. Will Joe Biden do that? I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of hope in that. But he should. He better. Maybe if the outcry is bold enough from the people, maybe he'll do that. We certainly hope so. If not, we're going to paint a very stark contrast for the people. We're going to send a flood of legislation to his desk and dare him to veto it, to unwind and undo all these crazy challenges with inflation and immigration and the general incompetence we see coming from the White House every single hour. And so we'll draw a heavy distinction, and that will set up a cataclysmic presidential election in 24. And Katie, bar the door. We have no idea what that's going to look like. I think President Trump is planning to run again. I don't know, a lot can happen between now and then, but either way, we'll present a stark alternative to what we're seeing right now in the country. And we'll alleviate the pain. The cavalry's on the way. So everybody just, if we can hang on, we can get there. So I'm very optimistic about it. Let me give you another bit of hope and encouragement. When that happens, the Louisiana delegation is going to be in very well positioned in the new Congress. If we have the largest majority in U.S. history and it's run by our team, we're going to have very well-placed members on that team. So as y'all probably know, everybody knows in this room, I know, I have to do basic civics in a lot of settings, but every state has two U.S. senators, and every state has a number of House members apportioned by population. So Louisiana has 6 members in the House of Representatives. By comparison, Texas has over 45, California has 50-something, New York has 50, Florida has a big. We have a small delegation, okay? So we call ourselves the SEAL Team 6 of Congress. We watch each other's back, and we have to watch out for Louisiana's interests together. But in that group, you know all the names, but Steve Scalise is the leader of our delegation. After we win the majority, right now he's the Republican whip. He's in the number 3 leadership position. He will very likely move up to be the majority leader in the House. And that is a big thing for Louisiana. We haven't had one in a long time. Steve loves North Louisiana, by the way. We'll have him up here. I'm currently in the number 4 position in the Republican Party in the House. I'm the vice chairman. And so there's a very good chance I become chairman of the whole conference, or I'll be in the top 5 leadership posts. Garrett Graves is from Baton Rouge. He's moving up in seniority on transportation and infrastructure, and he does all things Louisiana. He's very, very exceptional at what he does. Julia Letlow, my dear colleague over to the east of us, is new to Congress, as you all know, but we just pulled a coup, and we got her appointed as an appropriator. She's now on the House Appropriations Committee. We haven't had somebody from Louisiana on that committee in a long time. That's who doles out the funding, okay? We also have Clay Higgins, the Cajun John Wayne, to our south. And Clay is in line to get the gavel to be the chairman of the House Homeland Security Committee. You want somebody to close the border, you put the Cajun John Wayne in charge of it, right? And he's ready to go, that's what he'll tell you. So we have one Democrat in our delegation, Troy Carter from New Orleans area. And Troy's a moderate, common sense, really affable guy. He works well with us. So we're going to have a great team ready to roll to defend Louisiana's interest and to advance our causes, and that's going to be a good thing for us. And North Louisiana needs that. So good news on the horizon. Drill down in the weeds on one issue, and then I want to go to Q&A because I don't have that much time. But for your schedule, not mine. But I had breakfast this morning with the gentleman who's just been appointed the executive director of what they call Louisiana Connect. This is a new agency of state government they created to bridge the broadband, the digital divide that we have in a lot of our rural areas. And my congressional district, 15 parishes all north and west Louisiana, has some of the keenest need for this. When you combine federal and state dollars, they told me this morning, there will be about $2.6 billion invested in broadband connectivity efforts over the next 2 to 3 years in Louisiana. And they're targeting our areas. And so we talked about the plan and what that looks like. And they say it's gonna, they're gonna need about 5,000 new jobs, new workers to actually lay the cable line and all that. The way the programs work is they're gonna subsidize. The challenge has always been to get internet service providers to serve an outlying area because it costs them a lot to lay the cable and put the infrastructure in place to be able to do it. And so this money is going to subsidize that to the tune of about 80% of the cost. So they'll make it, they'll make the providers a deal they can't refuse. And so we'll get all of the everything covered, and they think that this can happen in the next couple of years. It'll be huge for us in a lot of ways, not only just from connectivity for education purposes and all of our small businesses, et cetera, but also, you know, telehealth and these advancements that we've had in medicine will keep people healthier. So it's long overdue, and there's some good things happening on that regard. I could talk to you all day long about the problems and the challenges we face, and I'll address them as you bring them up if you want to do that. But I can tell you that I can go deep and tell you how desperate and how terrible it is, and you feel it acutely, so you already know. But I can also tell you that we got solutions for all these challenges, and they're on the way. They're coming. So if we can bridge the gap and survive between now and then, better days are ahead. So let me stop talking because I can do it all day. But let me pitch it to you and tell me what's on your heart. And if you don't, then I'm just going to do Trump impressions because I had six people request that already today. Apparently, I did it too much the last time I was here. So, questions? Anything? Nothing's off guard. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Great question. And it's, you know, that is always the first or second question in any venue I'm in where if you didn't hear it in the front, what about election security? Obviously, that's a big, big deal, right? So I am very optimistic about the upcoming cycle, and here's why. We saw all sorts of chaos and hijinks in 2020, and we don't have to relitigate that here. Everybody knows that it was an unusual, unprecedented kind of situation. And the reason is, if you remember, it was occasioned by COVID. So the very long seminar, I do like a two-hour seminar on this. Let me give you the two-minute version. What happened was, because of the pandemic in the early spring of that election year 2020, elections officials and state officers and local officials started to panic because they looked out and they said, oh, my goodness, in November we got a presidential election cycle. This is a big one, and people aren't going to be able to get to the polls. So we need to change all the election laws and make sure everybody can participate. Seemed like a noble goal, and a lot of people operated in good faith. They started changing the rules. Well, maybe we should just mail a ballot to everybody in the state, even if they request it or not. Maybe we should, and this is where it went into bad faith. There were some local officials who began to take advantage of this opportunity and say, oh, you know, maybe we should put, ballot boxes out in public parks for about 2 weeks that where nobody's watching them. What could go wrong, you know? Maybe we should have ballot harvesters. You know, they started creating all these kind of crazy things. Here's the key to summarize everything that happened in one short summary. All of the changes they did to the election laws were unconstitutional. Article 1, Section 2 says only the state legislatures have the constitutional authority to create the system to choose the electors to elect a president, okay? And when they did all those little haphazard changes everywhere, here, there, and everywhere, it was a state election commissioner or a secretary of state or sometimes a governor, sometimes a state district court. It was not the legislature itself. And why is that a problem? Why did the founders put that in the Constitution itself? Because they knew that you needed a duly elected body of the representatives of the people, a big group of people to make that decision, not unilaterally by one or two people, because it would create chaos. And that's what we had. And so many people don't trust the election outcome of 2020 because they saw this happening. They don't know how much fraud there was. They don't know how many unprecedented events took place, and we can never prove most of it. So what happened because of all the chaos that ensued, and we know everything that – by the way, we asked the Supreme Court on December 10th of 2020 to address that question, were all these changes unconstitutional? I filed a brief to the Supreme Court on behalf of 146 members of Congress, and they punted it. It was too hot for them to handle, and they said, I'm sorry, y'all don't have standing to ask us that question. If they'd resolved it, we wouldn't be talking about this right now. But anyway, so it all happened. Everybody knows the aftermath of it. So what happened was in January of 2021, we had Republican Party had a great election cycle in 2020 in spite of that. We lost the White House, but we did extraordinarily well on almost every area, and we won control of most of the state legislatures. So in January of 2021, the legislators, frustrated as we are about this, they said, we got to fix this. In our state, so much as it's with our control, we're going to pass laws to make sure that all those regular things don't happen again, ever again. So over 400 pieces of legislation were filed in the legislatures around the country. Most of that signed into law, and they made meaningful reforms to ensure that we can trust the ballot this round. There's no more blanket mailing out of absentee ballots. There's no more extending the voting period to 3 weeks. There's no more ballot boxes in the public parks. All that crazy stuff has been eliminated in most of the states. And so that's a very good development. It gives us a high degree of confidence. And on top of that, poll watchers are deeply engaged. Now everybody's watching it, right? So you just saw a trial run in Georgia, a couple days ago. There's no allegation of fraud or irregularity there because there was so much scrutiny paid to that. And they tightened their laws to make sure it wouldn't happen. And we have a high degree of confidence that it's integrity again. So we have to have that. If we don't have that in a constitutional republic, if people don't believe in the sanctity of the ballot box, that we have nothing. So it's a critically important issue. I stand here today to tell you that I believe we can trust the system. I know Louisiana's tightened down. And barring some crazy unforeseen circumstance, I think we're going to be okay. So great, great question. It's on everybody's heart and mind, but I think we're okay. Yes, sir. Great question. So the windfall elimination provision is a lot of people. This affects a lot of people here. Big, big thing. The good news is it's a terrible crisis. The good news is it affects everybody regardless of their political party. So there's a bipartisan coalition of us that are working to fix that. There's been three pieces of legislation. I think I've co-sponsored all three of them to try to eliminate that so that they say that people in that situation are double dipping. They're not. You pay into Social Security. It's like a contract, right? You're effectively investing in your own future in that way, and so it's just terrible, and it incentivizes bad behavior to take the benefit away. So I don't know if I hope that we can get it passed this Congress, meaning before all this winds up in November. It needs to happen yesterday. There's a groundswell of supporters on both sides that are pushing that. I don't know what the total number is, but we need to get up to 218 votes in the House to advance it. We're really close to that. So hopefully, because it's an election year and people are going home and they're in town halls and they're getting the same question, the people that aren't with us, they're probably going to get with us soon, and hopefully we can get it done. If not, it will be a top priority of the Republicans in the new majority we have in January in the new Congress. So hang on. Hopefully this helps on the way for that. It's just really wrong what they did to so many folks. My mother-in-law, Betty Larry, taught for 33 years at Minden High School. So this hits close to home to us. So, other questions? Oh, I know y'all got some questions. Come on. All the crazy stuff going on. You want me to talk about immigration? You really want me to get – you're going to get heartburn after you just ate? You know how many people came across the border illegally last month? Just last month, 234,000 illegals. They come from 160 countries, and they do not care because – the Biden administration and Department of Homeland Security, Secretary Mayorkas, and all the rest of them dropped the border. We don't have a border. We don't have a border. They're not even trying. The ones they apprehend, they turn most of them loose. 41% of those 234,000 were turned away and sent home. But you know why? Because we had Title 42. You know what President Biden's trying to do? Get rid of Title 42. Title 42 is the health provision that says because of COVID or any other communicable disease, sorry, you got to go back to your home country if you test positive. Well, they are actually trying to remove that. The only thing stopping it right now is a court stepped in and said, you can't remove that. But they're doing everything they can to get rid of it. This is intentional.
What's their motivation?
Thank you for asking, Mr. Former Mayor. What's the motivation? Why would they drop the borders? They know how dangerous this is. We have dangerous terrorists. They were going to assassinate George W. Bush. Y'all saw that in the last 24 hours. You saw that? An Iraqi terrorist got over. He's among many that we can't count that are in the country in terrorist cells now, setting, planning whatever. Whoever knows. But why would they do it? I get asked all the time. Why would they do it? Let me tell you. You know what I tell you? I said this to Secretary Mayorkas. Y'all might have seen this about 2 weeks ago. He came before the House Judiciary Committee and our ripped his head off in Jesus' name because there's a time to every purpose under heaven. I said, sir, you are not only derelict in your duty, I believe you've committed impeachable offenses. And my advice to you right now is to start looking for another job because we're going to be in charge here in a couple of – I had to calm down. So they've done it intentionally. You know why? They want to turn them into voters. And there was another viral clip that I had about a week ago, also in House Judiciary Committee. I turned over to Jerry Nadler. We were at about hour six of a six-hour-long hearing. He was worn down. It was about 11:30 at night. I thought this might be my opportunity. I might be able to get him on the record. So I turned over to him, and I said, Chairman Nadler, can I ask you a simple question? All my constituents want to know, why would we erase the borders? Isn't it true that you guys just want to turn them into voters? And he goes, well, I mean, that's all blah, 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 blah. I said, hold on. You're from New York. New York City Council voted in December to begin in January 1, 2023. They're going to count illegal. You're going to be able to vote in municipal elections for mayor, city council. New York City, our largest city, illegals can vote. They did the same thing in San Francisco. They've done it in Vermont and Maryland. And it's starting in the municipalities. And he had to frankly admit that it was true. Well, I don't see any problem with that. And New York's got a good policy. We should put that all over the country. Ha! Aha! I'm like, everybody wake up on C-SPAN. Hey, wake up. He just said it. There it is. That's what it's about. They know that their policies are so crazy and unpopular. Everybody sees the results of leftist policies right now, and they're not buying it. So they're never going to vote that stuff in again. So they believe, and because voter integrity is being cleaned up, the only way they can possibly win another big round of national elections is if they have illegals come in and vote. Why the illegals? Why are they so important? Because they're all getting on public assistance. They're bringing them in. They're getting free cell phones and free health care and they're getting welfare benefits and everything else. And so they're going to turn to the people who are funding all that, and they're going to vote them into office. This is what the founders also warned us about. If the people realize that they can put in tyrants who will give them stuff, then they'll perpetuate that. That's where we are. So they're trying to turn these people into voters. That's the plan. That's their last-ditch effort. And you can quote me because I'm all over. I do this in committee hearings and on the House floor. That is the game. So how do we combat that? We restore the rule of law. We restore the border, for goodness sakes. I should just take this room of people down. We could do it right now, okay? Restore order on the border. Because if you do not have a secure border, you don't have security in your country. You don't even have sovereignty. You're not even a nation if you don't have a border. And you know what? They don't want us to be a sovereignty. They don't want 100% Americanism. They want 0% Americanism. They make apology. They don't like what we are. They have disdain for the founding principles that we all believe in. They want to replace us with a European-style socialist one-world government. That is not a conspiracy theory. They're making the arguments right now. So it is up to patriots and common-sense Americans to stand for truth, and we will do it fiercely and without apology. And I don't care who it offends. And I'm sorry, and we try to be Christ-like in every arena, but sometimes, you know, even Jesus overturned the tables on the temple steps, okay? That's where we are. It's truth and untruth. That is the battle right now. And we're going to stand for truth, and if we go down, we're going down swinging. But I don't think we're going to go down. I think we're going to prevail. So, yeah, yes, sir, back here and then over here. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah. So that's the probably the third most common question in every town hall. So here's the reality, though, okay? So let's theoretically say we take control in January and we go impeach Biden. I believe he probably has committed impeachable offenses. We won't do it like they did with Trump as a political ploy. We'll do it because he's earned it, deserved it, right? We'll have a full investigation. We'll let the facts lead where they are. And let's say the open defiance of federal law at the border alone should be it's a high crime and misdemeanor. Look what's happening to us. Okay, but let's say that we could get the support to impeach President Biden. Well, then Vice President Harris steps in. Okay, that's almost more frightful. It may be in a lot of cases. Has she committed impeachable offenses? I mean, it's utter incompetence. Is it impeachable? I don't know. But let's just say theoretically we can impeach both of them. Well, third in line is Nancy Pelosi, right? Now, maybe in January after the big – oh, I know, right? I know. So maybe after the election cycle, the Speaker of the House is Kevin McCarthy. Maybe he'd be ready to take the Oval Office. I don't know. But it's a huge endeavor, obviously, to impeach a president. It's only happened a couple of times. It was reserved to be the nuclear option for all the obvious reasons. I don't know where all that's going to go. But there's a lot of game to be played before we get to that point, and so those decisions will be made. I can tell you there's a lot of people. Look, I believe Mayorkas has to go on day one. I believe the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, is very close to impeachable offenses. I mean, they've weaponized the Department of Justice. They're using it as a political arm for the Democrat Party. I called him out on it, too, in another viral clip. We're telling them the truth, and it's not popular all the time, but that's what it is. So great questions. We don't know yet. We have to see. We have to see what happens. There was one over here. Yes, sir. We have an epidemic of suicide in this country, and there's a lot of reasons for it, but that's such a sad, tragic case. To answer your question in a general sense, this is what has outraged the American people so much. One of the things that's outraged everybody about the border is that all these people come over and they get on public assistance and they get all these free resources and all that. And meanwhile, the cost for law-abiding U.S. citizens continue to skyrocket, healthcare and otherwise. It's not a sustainable situation. And at some point, if the government does not get control of this situation, the people are going to have had enough, right? I mean, these are desperate times. And so I think the general answer to that situation is it happens daily now, right? By the way, I voted against the $40 billion in additional aid to Ukraine 2 weeks ago, and I took some flack from the left for that. But listen, we'd already sent $13 billion. The $40 billion that they presented to us, we got the bill 3 hours before the vote. This thick, a bit larger than a phone book in most American cities. No way anybody read that legislation before we voted on it. $40 billion is a lot of money. It's a magnitude of like 10 times the amount we've sent to Israel to help their defenses over like a decade-long period. I mean, it's just crazy money. And there's no strings, there's no requirements on the use of the money, so a lot of it will be wasted, spent on oligarchs or whatever. By the way, we have to borrow it from China to send it to Ukraine, and we haven't even rebuilt South Louisiana after the hurricanes yet, so how am I going to go home and tell my people in Louisiana we're going to rebuild Ukraine when we can't do our own, you know, like, America first, man. That's not just a slogan that Trump came up with. It should be 100% Americanism. That's where I stand. So it's just common sense. We have a $30 trillion federal debt. We cannot afford to take everybody in without any rules or restrictions and adopt them and take care of them. That's not reality. But our colleagues in Congress follow what they call modern monetary theory. And their theory is that inflation's not real. The debt doesn't really matter. As long as we own the printing presses, we can just keep printing it and dropping it like helicopters over the system. How's that working out for us on inflation? We have the highest inflation in over 40 years, and it's going to continue to go up. And they're projecting our gas prices will be over $6 a gallon by August. We can reverse all this because it's policy choices, but you have to put new people in charge. So we will. Bless your family and your employees and everybody who's struggling with that. Help's on the way. I know I'm running out of time. Do I have time for one more? He's got a giant hook he's about to put around my neck. Right back here, that hand was up first. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Oh, yeah. Okay, so let me give you a very brief summary on the fossil fuel, the energy policy crisis, okay? The reason our gas prices are so high is because I'm going to talk real fast. Hold on. So President Trump comes in and he says, I don't want to talk about energy independence anymore. I'm talking about energy dominance. We were like, yes, because we're in Louisiana. So we achieved it. We were a net exporter. At the end of the Trump administration, gas prices were low, exports were high, we were doing well, the industry is doing well and rebounding. Then Biden comes in and he does reflexively, automatically, the opposite of what Trump did. In the first 3 weeks of his office, he issued executive orders. The first one was a moratorium on federal exploration and production on federal land. That killed us in Louisiana because it included the continental shelf. Then he kills the Keystone Pipeline, all the jobs associated with that, tens of thousands of jobs and all the oil that would supply to us, goes on and on and on. He greenlights, by the way, Putin's pipeline, which is the way he's able to fund his war on Ukraine, by the way. We're responsible for that. So Biden does all this stuff by executive order. Didn't come through the Congress. We didn't get a say on it at all. all of it could be reversed if Congress had, if we had the votes in the Congress to claw back that authority. And it's real simple to do. This isn't rocket science. And by the way, this, the demand for fossil fuels did not reduce in this country just because some new guy entered the Oval Office and signed a piece of paper. The supply, the demand did not go down. If anything, it increases. So we didn't stop driving our trucks because President Biden got elected, right? But the demand in the U.S. has to be met. If it's not being met with American fossil fuel, oil and gas, we have to go to Saudi Arabia and Russia hat in hand and beg OPEC to increase production. And by the way, not only does it cost us more at the pump and increase the pain of the American people, it's also worse for the environment because they're producing it in a way that's much less efficient and cost-effective and good for the environment. So it's totally counterproductive. It's madness. Again, but why would they do that? Because the environment is a religion to them. Climate change is their religion. The great sacrament they have is abortion, and second to that is the environment. And there's a whole spiritual component to that that I don't have time to unpack. But can we unwind it and fix it? Yes. When we get the majority, believe me, that'll be top of the agenda. And we're going to dare the president to veto the legislation we send to fix this. By that time, if gas is $6 a gallon, $7 a gallon, the American people and even the Democrats will be with us on that. And so we're counting on it because that's the only way to save it. We could fix it, but it takes political will to do it. Right now we don't have the votes, but we will soon. Last one, Mr. Mayor. Yes, he's earned it. That's the fourth most common question in every town hall. Who's in charge of the country? It can't be doddering the old president. Okay, and the truth of the matter is I think there's a group of people who are really driving the train. Some of the leftist interest groups that were heavily funded and invested in his campaign, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and their teams who are driving a lot of the policy, as you can tell, Susan Rice, who's a holdover from the Obama administration. I think there's a small group of people who are really pulling the strings. And Biden doesn't stand for anything. He's incapable of telling the truth half the time now. He's just, he's beyond his best years. Can I be charitable? He's not in control. And that's a scary thing for us, because when you elect a commander-in-chief, you want to believe that he's in control, and I don't believe he is. But I think the American people see that. I think the jig is up, and I think we're going to have a sea change. And I'm way, way over time. I'm supposed to turn it over to you. You? Colonel? Thank you. Sorry.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you.